Hi, I'm Lindsay Cate.
And I'm Kelly Nugent, and we co-host the podcast Teen Creeps.
We talk about YA Pulp Fiction, but this week we took a little detour to talk about the 1996 classic The Craft.
And we were joined by our movie expert, Oscar Montoya.
Yes. Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
So fun. We covered a lot.
We talked about how Skeet Ulrich is hot now for some of us, but also maybe this is the last time we'll ever podcast together.
We talked about what we would do if we had the power of Manon within us.
We talked about the real black girl magic, which is never aging.
We talked about how the scariest part of kissing someone is if you are wearing a heavy lip. And the lipstick is gone after you kiss.
We talked about Wet Pet San Pablo.
We talked about Fairuza Balk being truly a goddess.
Legendary. So if any of that appeals to you, which it does and should and also does, you should check us out this week on Teen Creeps right here on the Forever Dog Podcast Network, wherever you get your podcasts.
Keep it creepy.
Forever. Dog.
This episode of The Need to Fail is brought to you by the Grammys, an award show that celebrates the best grandmothers out there today. Awards like Best Nanny Grammy, Most Fatalistic Grammy, and Grammy with the Most Swollen Weathered Grammy Hands, with performances by Mildred, Dottie, and Philomena, and a surprise collaboration between Grandma Esther and Grandma Carmella, because remember, they haven't been talking to each other since that soup thing that happened in 2016. Woo. The Grammys, only on She Be Best.
Sometimes you need to fail.
The need to fail.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to The Need to Fail. My name's Don Finelli. I run this thing. Just got back from a last-minute baby moon this weekend. My wife and I went down to San Diego just for a night. Just, you know, one of those final things before the kiddo comes. And first time I was there, it was absolutely beautiful. I really love San Diego. But on the way back, we wanted to stop in La Jolla because we've never been there either. And we read about, like, oh, yeah, there's these, like, spots where there are a bunch of seals are on the beach. You can kind of, like, watch a bunch of seals and sea lions on the beach. Man, there were seals and sea lions all over the goddamn place. Not only that, people were getting super close to these things. Like, you could just walk down and there was just, like, piles of seals just sleeping on each other. There's people taking freaking selfies, like, inches from them. And the seals were like, yeah, whatever. But I was like looking around, I was like, no one's going to regulate this shit. Like, there's just random people and like seals. And I don't know if they're endangered or not, but I was like, damn, man, these people are getting close. They're going to get bit on the ass from these seals. I guess I was part of the problem. Like Laura and I got somewhat close, but like not anywhere close that this thing could like launch itself at us or anything like that. So we were just like taking some pictures, but I was like, damn, man, you gotta regulate this. So we got like, kind of just like, yeah, there's too many people here. So we went to this other part of the beach and we were kind of like standing on this overhang and they were looking below and it was just Laura and I, and we're just like watching like this little family, a couple families of seals just like resting on the beach. But then we started watching this little cub and its mother like try to get out of the water, and the mother was like, come on, follow me out of the ocean, let's go. And they'd get on the beach and then a wave would crash and like knock the kid back into like just like take them back into the water. And we watched this for like 10 minutes, this cub struggling to come out, getting pushed past his mother trying to change her body to try to catch him. And they don't got hands. The seal can't grab onto anything. And he just kept getting swept back into the ocean. And I was just like, holy, it was captivating. And then finally the cub and the mother make it out of the water. She's like kissing him on the mouth. And then this other, they got too close to this fat fuck seal. And this fat fuck seal just bites the cub like in the head. The cub like fought back for a hot second, but the mother like intervenes and is like, let's get the hell out of here. And then the cub starts crying and his mother's like kissing him, and that made Laura start crying. And it was raining out And it was like a fucking Fellini movie, I swear to God. We're ready to be parents. Anyway, we got such a treat for you today because my guest today is Keiko Agena. You know her from Gilmore Girls. And she was just in Dirty John on Bravo with Connie Britton and Eric Bana. And she's in one of my favorite shows, Better Call Saul, and a ton of other stuff. But she also wrote a book that came out last year. It's called No Mistakes, a perfect workbook for imperfect artists. And the perfect is crossed out. It's part self-help book, part sketchbook, part coloring book. To get those that are feeling stuck creatively unstuck, it embraces and encourages failure. It's filled with inspiring quotes and practical, easy exercises that make you kind of confront yourself honestly, but also help conjure up that playfulness in your artistic side. One page I love is just like 100 blank lines and says, list all of the things that you failed at, and if you can't finish the list, then get out there. You have more failing to do. She also talks about her personal failure in the book on one page. She says, I have failed a lot. There were numerous auditions for acting roles I thought I did well at, but I didn't book the job. There were many auditions I meant to do well at, but I didn't do well at all. I actually had a casting director say these words to me, hun, don't beat yourself up too much on the way home. I have failed at remembering names, failed at producing events, failed at being funny on a talk show. I have failed at being funny on stage, failed at playing it cool, failed at being open to new ideas, and many, many, many more. The only way to avoid failure is to avoid starting, but that's a temporary fix. The pressure builds up in the void of action. Feelings of failure following long periods of inaction are the most difficult to deal with. The pain of wasted time is a monster. I don't like failing. I don't like admitting that I failed. I don't think that failure in itself by itself is so great. I do think, however, that it's part of the bigger picture. I do think that it's part of the process. I do think that it's going to happen. And by the way, there is never as much artistic freedom as after a big personal failure. When your ego surrenders and you go back to square one and all the blocks are taken away, that is where brilliance is born. So I suggest you fail now, fail soon, fail often. Learn what you can and let it go. When you have nothing to lose, that is when you can take the biggest risks. Rediscover your love for your art when you let go of your perceived success. Ooh, isn't that great? Oh, I love it. There's so much good stuff in this book. I don't want to give too much away, but one more. There's this little blurb at the bottom of one of the pages that just struck me nicely. She says, sometimes we actively stress ourselves out because we convince ourselves that that's what working feels like. We think that if we're not producing art, at least we're stressing about it. Nope. I love it. Highly recommend picking up this book, guys. Keiko was such a joy to talk to. In the beginning, she talks about this book called The Wisdom of the Enneagram. It's a book that helps explain this like personality test that's called the Enneagram. I had no idea, never heard of it, but I took it. I took it afterwards, and I came out a 7, which is called The Enthusiast. And I've taken like a Myers-Briggs test before and some other. None are perfect. They're pretty accurate, but this one came pretty close to nailing some things about how I work and live my life. 7s, enthusiasts are very optimistic. They're versatile. They're spontaneous. They're playful, high-spirited, and practical. They can also misapply their many talents, becoming overextended, scattered, and undisciplined. They constantly seek new and exciting experiences, but can become distracted and exhausted by staying on the go. They typically have problems with impatience and impulsiveness. Oops. It goes into a lot more detail there. You could take the test free online. I mean, you can lean towards other numbers too. I came out like a 4 one time, which is like the individualist, but 7 kind of hit me in all my forms. I recommend it. Keiko and I nerd out a little bit on our love of improv, but we chat about her anxiety and how she tries to keep that under control, among many other things. I think you're going to love her if you don't love her already. So I say we get to it. Here she is, Keiko Agena.
You know, this idea of how to overcome failure, it's like so essential to creative people, I think, you know, because everybody has to deal with it. So it's what is your tool set?
Yeah.
And how you deal with it. And then how can you pick and choose from other people?
Yeah.
I love that idea.
Yeah. I want people to kind of take as many different tools as possible and just see what works for them. Because like I was saying, I feel like we box ourselves in and go like, there's only a couple of different ways to do it. Or our heroes did it this way, therefore I have to do it like that. And it's like, you just might not be programmed like that. I mean, everyone has different learning styles. Everyone has different ways to cope with things. Everyone has different life experiences. And you're pulling all that together. And it's really to limit yourself. Right. To go like, oh, I can only do X, Y, and Z to succeed. I think that's bullshit. That's why I love talking to different people.
Can I throw a wrench into it already?
Yes.
Have you heard of this? Have you ever heard of the system called the Enneagram?
Mm-mm.
You haven't?
No, let's talk about it.
I feel like I'm gonna you might like it.
Okay.
I'm obsessed with it.
Okay.
So it's a personality type system. I don't know a lot about Myers-Briggs, but I hear it sounds like it's similar to that. But it's the Enneagram is the one I know about, and it's like 9 different types of personality. So that's how it's categorized.
Cool.
It doesn't have to do with anything about how you were when you were born or anything like that. But it's just like you said, like we're all different, and what are our tool sets?
Yeah.
And so when I learned about it, I recognized myself. In one of the numbers. And then it also has helped me in my relationships because I recognize other people's numbers and see how they problem solve and, you know, and whether or not certain people do better with goal setting and whether in some cases not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are you?
Okay. So
is this a free test? Is this one of these free tests you can just do?
Yeah, there's tons online.
Okay, cool. I've done the Myers-Briggs. I've done
you
that.
Have. Yeah. So I think there are correlations for sure.
Okay, cool.
So if you go online there, I don't know which one is the best, but the book that I've gotten is called The Wisdom of the Enneagram.
Mm-hmm.
And the two guys that wrote that have written other books, so that's the one that I like the most. So if you get that book, it's cheap. It's on Amazon and all that.
Cool.
But I'm a number 6,
okay,
which is a loyalist.
Uh-huh.
And my downside is being very anxious. So some qualities of a loyalist, one, is they're loyal. So I'm very skeptical of a lot of things because because once I commit, I kind of go all in. Like I have no, once you get this, so there's, in a typical loyalist, there's a large wall. but as soon as you get over that wall, you're home free, baby. I mean, everything's.
It's a long way down and you're just free flowing.
I'm open. I have nothing, you know, I'm with you. I am on your team 100%. And so, but one other thing is that they're very, in their heads and very, anxious. So like as a little example, so a 3 is is someone who is an achiever and they're very goal oriented and they do very well.
Right.
With goals. And I always criticized myself because I thought I should be more like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I read about this particular system, everybody's different, but I realized that actually what helps me is that I'm already going to be so analytical and judgmental about a lot of things that what I really need to do is if I could just relax and trust myself a little bit, that's actually a better road to go for me personally. And I've kind of found that to be true.
Right.
Instead of the setting goals in that way, just kind of
arbitrarily
reinforces.
Like instead of setting like arbitrary goals, being like, oh, I need to get this, like, you now know what you need to achieve your goals, like an easier path to achieve those goals. Is that what it helps you with?
Even less than that, even I know you
love
like,
it. Yeah.
Even more of just even relaxing and not necessarily
like non-judgmental stuff. Like,
yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Which is a huge hurdle.
Yeah.
That's tough. That's really, really tough. When did you discover that? And what did you do before you discovered that?
Now I discovered that about, I think it was already still into Gilmore Girls. Mm-hmm. I forget which year it was.
Yeah.
But before that, I just probably beat myself up about, I mean, I still beat myself up a ton,
right.
But I probably just was hard, just thought that was normal and just, that the harder I was on myself it was the only way to go.
Were you auditioning a bunch before Gilmore Girls or did that happen pretty fast for you?
Well, I landed in LA in 92 and Gilmore Girls happened in 2000. I wouldn't say that I auditioned a bunch. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I was in the city. I was living. I know there were some auditions. I don't know if I would characterize them as a bunch. Yeah.
But you were that was your goal though.
Yeah.
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 And
I kind of landed in LA.
Right. Yeah. So you just kind of, did you come here though to act?
Well, so my mini journey, I'll try to be concise, is that I landed in Walla Walla, Washington on a drama scholarship at Whitman College. Came down to LA because I had a boyfriend that was trying to pursue a music career down here for the summer, only for the summer. I hated LA. Mm-hmm. And I never went back to college.
Wow.
I sort of met people that inspired me and I couldn't afford college anyway, even with my partial scholarship. And that was in 92, 93, something like that. And I still left stuff at Whitman College. I mean, I don't know what they do with all your...
It's still there.
Okay, good. It's still in a corner taking up there. Rent at Whitman College.
A good friend of mine went there, so I'll check with them. Yes.
They just have a pile of all the people they just... Yeah.
Oh, no, they still have her stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
It's still in her room.
Great.
They're very nice there.
They are.
They don't touch your stuff.
No.
So, but you knew you wanted to act, though, and get into that kind of line of work.
Yeah.
And so 8 years about then to before you landed Gilmore Girls, was it going, were you very focused and being like, oftentimes when we're younger, we're a little bit more resilient to kind of the early rejections. Was that similar to your experience with it? Or did it get to a point where you're like, I don't think it's ever going to happen?
It's funny because I think I started with, I don't think it's ever going to happen. when I was in high school,
Hey, everybody, this is the B-Man, old BW from the World Record Podcast, and I'm here to let you know that me and my co-host, the A-Train, a.k.a. Hershey Hellman, took over office. I was live this week. We came into the studio. We made it our own. We wrecked the place. I stole one of Tim Heidecker's guitars. So check out Office Hours Live on your podcast app of your choice or at youtube.com/Office Hours Live this week and see what happens. Or go to worldrecordpodcast.com and you can watch the videos or join the Patreon, patreon.com/worldrecordpodcast. Enjoy the show.
It's showtime.
I'll tell you. Yeah. There's this teacher that I love. His name is Brian Clark, and he said something real depressing about how only 2% of actors make their living acting. And if you can do anything else besides acting, just do it. So that was in high school. And
good expectations.
So I was like, okay, well, I probably will never be able to make a living at this, but I will continue to do it as long as it's fun and as long as I'm enjoying myself. And I kind of needed to do it.
Yeah.
It's just what you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, you need to do it. Mm-hmm. So regardless of whether I get paid or not, I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. It's just how bad is my life going to be? Like, what level of pain am I going to be in while I do the thing that I need to do?
Right. Did it get to a painful place before, like, 2000 around there?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because there are different levels of painful places. Right. Yeah, before and after. I would actually say probably after was harder even in some ways. But because before Gilmore Girls, I didn't, you know, I wasn't making a living as an actor.
Right.
I didn't expect to, and there was no shame in it.
Right.
It kind of, you know,
yes.
I don't know if.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because
there's no shame. Nobody knows.
No one cares.
Yeah, nobody cares.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everyone, you're kind of like in the muck of it with everybody.
Yeah.
It's just like, yep, this is how it is. Good luck, everybody. But once you book something and then you're acting for a while, then there's other expectations.
Yeah,
that you put on yourself. There's other pressures that you put on yourself.
Yeah,
and then I'm guessing. So when that ends, did it open up different opportunities for you, or were they spread out? What was your expectations like when it stopped? Were you scared, or were you like, here we go, baby?
No, I was kind of terrified from the very beginning because I didn't trust. So starting even in 2000, I was convinced that I was going to be kicked off the show at any minute. There's one episode where my character leaves for Korea. It's early on. Mm-hmm. And I swear I thought that was it. Like my, I was gone. Yeah. And so it was just, I almost never
trusted yourself.
I never trusted myself and I never enjoyed myself.
All of the years.
Kind of a little bit. And so, and then the fear right after is that you're never going to work.
Cause some people would come out of there and go like, here we go. I at least have this under my belt. People, I've been working for a while. People know what I can do. And here's some, where are the other opportunities? Bring them my way. We're going to rock this out. Did you start working pretty steadily after that? Or was there a little bit of an actual dip that happened? And how did you deal with that?
Yeah, there was a dip. There was, I mean, well, let's be honest here. This is the podcast to talk about shit that went down.
This is it. Here we go.
All right, here we go. So I will say a pretty low, I won't mention the show, but, so there was a pretty low moment. This is after Gilmore Girls and, I'd gotten a part on a show. And, this is how bad my anxiety had gotten at some point is that there was a short scene in this, character arc and it was, I only had like three lines in it, but for some reason it wouldn't stay in my head. And when we got to, cause I had already, you know, the other scenes that had more of a meat to the bones, I loved it and it was great. But, for some reason it wouldn't stay in my mind. And I don't know if you've ever, you have.
Yeah. It's the worst.
It's an out of body experience. Like I couldn't.
It's humiliating.
It's completely humiliating. Yeah. There's the whole crew is there. There were five other people in the scene. It was a group scene, and it would get to my line, and I could feel it before the cue comes. And you're like, I don't have it. I don't.
Terrifying.
It's completely terrifying. And that was the first thing I shot.
Oh boy.
And I knew I had another week on that show. And it got better after that. But the that's how bad like the mindset can kind of
It blocks you. Yeah. It completely blocks you. I think out of just protectiveness and the opposite, like you're like, I don't want to be protected. I want to use my gift.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, no, it's scary. Or like, especially if you have self-doubt or there's negative self-talk, it's convincing you that you don't have anything to say or manifests itself.
Yeah.
In a block
real
you up.
Physical, legit.
Wrong time. Wrong
and
time.
Like, don't do this. I think that was the worst.
How did you push through? How do you kind of push through these kind of, someone's struggling with anxiety or negative self-talk. How did you push through it back then? Is it different now?
Yeah. I would say that for me, I don't know how it is with everybody, that it was a really long road. I mean, I don't think there was one little thing that kind of fixed everything.
Right.
But it's different things. Like I know that you read a lot of
this stuff.
Like putting the right things in the inbox of tools that other people have used.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it is that you think that can help you and that you realize does actually evidentiate, you know, helps you.
Was there one big one that really helped you out? Do you remember?
Well, I can say some of the things that one thing that is continually because, you know, like when you audition, it's just constant, you know, this kind of up and down thing.
Right.
Is that now I really know what it feels like, what failure feels like physically in my body. You know, it's this, you know, the feeling of tension. And I also know how long it takes me to kind of come out of it. And because I've done it so much, that now there's an ease in my mind because I know my own physical body rhythm. And so then it's not, then it's not as scary. So that's one thing that I know that, just over the course of years.
You know what it feels like. You can recognize it.
Yes.
And you can kind of address it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times we're resisting it, but you're accepting it.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
And then I know just because it has happened so many times that it used to take me, you know, literally it was almost like a 3-day process. So you get the audition and then, you know, whether it's good or bad, it's just that tightness and then how long it takes. And so now it's a lot. My whole attitude about Well, my life is also better in other ways too. But there's a lot of other things that make it easier. But, but that's definitely one thing.
That's something that you learned how to control.
Yeah.
Because that can be paralyzing, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's kind of like your acting, like if you have an audition, what's kind of your prep like with that? Has that changed over the years? Are you more comfortable doing one thing or another? Or do you, are you the type of person just reads it a lot and tries it out a different way? Or do you have an actual like system that you do?
Yeah, I have a system that I like in approaching that I've just, you know, cobbled together from different techniques over the years. And it's much more joyful now, you know, of how I gobble up. You know,
text.
How
you use it. Are you reading it differently? Are you doing?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So you'll read it and start. What do you mean by how you gobble it up?
Well, I think for me, the base thing that always needs to happen is that regardless of the character, you have to I have to fall in love. And that's almost the most painful thing is that that was the hardest thing when things didn't happen is because it's almost like this sounds so dramatic. It's almost like a death of this imaginary person. Mm-hmm. Because to me, if I don't fully invest that hard and love that person and love the people that that person loves, then there's no fucking chance in hell I'm going to get it. I mean, there isn't.
Yeah.
So that's the base thing that I have to do.
So you're reading it to try to find the places to fall in love with that character.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty great.
So there has to be, I have to understand that person so well that I not only have compassion for their point of view, whether it's a terrible, horrible point of view,
right?
But that I love them and I love the people that they love.
And that's what good writing does. That's what's helpful about good writing.
That's easy.
Right? Yeah. I always find myself with kind of okay writing. It's almost harder for me to memorize because I can't, it's not like how a human would talk, or it's like this, it doesn't feel authentic to this character that I don't know or something like that.
No, exactly.
But with great writing, you can just take it down and you can just really connect with it. It's almost like putting yourself on the page immediately.
Yeah, that's a joy. Like when you get those, you're like, oh, I can't wait.
Yeah. Have you gotten those and then not gotten those? How do you deal with like you're saying like over the years now you can kind of feel with it. Is there anything that you anything you do to kind of like motivate yourself before or just to kind of get in the zone and pump yourself up? And then if you don't get it, how do you kind of deal with like not getting something that you really wanted? Two part question.
Yeah. I think getting in the zone for me now is 100% enjoyable, which it was not before. But now I don't know how to explain. But I feel more that everything is an opportunity, an opportunity for me to practice and enjoy and to give life to this person that is going to live in me for this one moment, for this sometimes 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Where other people can experience it. But I actually get to live with that character for the entire time that I'm working on them and with them.
Right.
And then as far as letting them go, I don't know if this comes with age also, but it's almost like a bigger picture and a bigger problem of how this is so dramatic, but how we deal with death how do you let go of things?
Yeah.
And that's that's a harder thing, but that's the same process for me of
some mini grieving,
getting better,
like a mini grieving kind of thing.
No, it's not so. No, I've talked corny, to many
people.
But it's
I've talked
true.
To many people about this. Like you kind of have to grieve. I think you have to grieve your disappointments.
Yes.
Anyway, I think you have to let those out because I think if you push them down, they're going to come out at the wrong time. So I think if you at least kind of release it, grieve it, and say, "Man, I really loved this thing." I think it's a really healthy thing to do. Yeah. And you're literally falling in love with your characters. I was like, oh man, if you don't get that you have to say goodbye to something you love over and over again. That's hard. But you're willing to put yourself in there because you know, correct me if I'm wrong, you know that you need to do that to then at least book something. You can't just kind of
That's what I think.
Yeah. No, that's special, I think. That's a special process. Yeah. You know, I think that's a really, really cool. I haven't heard anybody talk about it like that. That's really, really awesome. Did you, during, you know, these times where maybe you had some self doubts or you had anxiety and stuff, were you reaching out to anybody? Did you try to, are you someone that asks for help, or were you the type of person that's like, I got to figure this out myself. I got to find my own path.
That's a good question. I am fortunate to have a wonderful support system mm-hmm. of friends and family. And I have a lot of people that are in my life that aren't in mm-hmm. the entertainment industry, or at least in it the same way that I am.
Right.
So I know that, and that's a great relief to me. Mm-hmm. I do think, though, that a lot of this kind of letting go, the grieving thing, I think it's kind of personal. Mm-hmm. It right. feels like a solo
yeah.
journey. Although I will say that it is helpful to commiserate with people.
Yeah.
You know, at the bar.
Sure.
Everything happens in the bar.
Everything.
Yeah. You know, yeah, of yeah. the of
you commiserate more and more as the night goes on.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And it's great to hear terrible stories. Oh, terrible yeah. auditions is ugh.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Love
you it. Want it's it. Really. You just well, that's why I do this podcast. You just don't want to feel alone. I mean, yeah. like you feel so isolated and alone yeah. during this thing, especially any creativity is, you know, putting anything creative there's so such vulnerability, yeah. you know what I mean? So it's like anytime someone just goes like, I feel you, I've been there, yeah. or like, I know what you're going through, it's yeah. just that much more easy. Mm-hmm. And it's easier to like pick up the fucking paintbrush again and just start painting again mm-hmm. and doing what you have to do. What inspired you to write the book then? Is this a years of kind of figuring all this stuff out, or was it like I noticed people would, you know, keep their failures inside and have them kind of ruin their next opportunity, and failure is not a bad thing?
Yeah, I think, well, here kind of to tie back in yeah, with the please. Whole Enneagram thing please. Is that so in the only thing that I do that is my process, I think that's the reason why I can kind of get away with not goal setting mm-hmm. is that I'm a strong yes when it's right person.
Mm-hmm.
So when there is an opportunity, even if it seems light or soft,
mm-hmm.
and I know that it's good, mm-hmm. I will grab onto it and I will dig my heels in. I will push and I will work as hard as I can mm-hmm. To do at least my best mm-hmm. in that. And so that's how I kind of have gone through life more recently. And it's really fulfilling mm-hmm. to me in that way. And so the book came about in that sort of way, where I was on a podcast for Gilmore Guys, mm-hmm. which is a
yep.
For our show. And then I had mentioned that I'd been drawing for about a year just as a personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
And people had commented about, you know, if you put a book together, I would buy it. And I just casually mentioned it. And then an editor at Penguin Random House had listened to the podcast and actually contacted me. And so that started wow. the ball rolling. And instead of just it purely being an art book, through our process of talking about what would you really want to make if mm-hmm. this is what you want to put out there in the world. And so that became this workbook for artists. It's called No Mistakes. And mm-hmm. and I'm really grateful for having gone through that process, because I was able to put into the book all of the tools that I didn't even know that I had, and mm-hmm. the way that I work through problems, and it became almost a physical manifestation of the good side of my brain, mm-hmm. of the positive.
Yeah.
I don't know if this podcast is this, I what? Don't know, for you. I mean, a yeah. way to like almost solidify the yeah. positive, good voices.
I want that. Yeah. Right? That's yeah. the whole point. The whole point of like, that is the point of the need to fail. Like, it's just yeah. learning how to deal with that and learning the tools to get over it. And if you, I think joy and happiness is kind of what we're going for here. So I always ask people too, like, do you have like a definition of failure, and do you have a definition of success in mm-hmm. your head? Like, did you always have a vision of what a successful life was? I'm sure it changes mm-hmm. over time, mm-hmm. depending on your circumstances.
Well, my definition of failure is kind of, that it happens all the time. Mm-hmm. I have a very intimate mm-hmm. friendship with failure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, well, because I know all of your experience and your amazing guests that have been on the show yeah. as far as like UCB and, mm-hmm. and I have, so I did improv for a mm-hmm. long time. And actually last night I was at UCB Sunset
nice.
Doing a little, you know, 15-minute whatever improv set.
Uh-huh.
And, but for me, I'm terrible.
You think you're bad at improv? You think you're terrible at improv?
I probably am not technically terrible, but, you know, I'm not one of the greats. I'm not like the, you know, the
so
stars.
So who cares?
No, I know, but I love it.
Yeah.
But talk about having, you know, but I love it, and I will go and talk about being feeling failure on a regular. I mean, I know that beast.
Yeah.
So I have a more of a friendship with it.
Yeah.
And then as far as success, I mean, in a technical way, I always considered success to be, can I make a living doing what it is that I love to do?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm blessed that I have been able to do that for as long as I have.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a technical way, I appreciate that. But in another sense, success is trying to start to define my life outside of acting in the business and trying to fill out my life.
Incorporate
more,
other areas.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see. Because there's personal stuff. There's stuff outside of your career.
Mm-hmm.
But the career consumes us a lot of the time, and it takes almost all of our energy.
Yeah.
But to find that balance, is that basically what it is? It's like the more, hopefully the more you do this stuff, the more you try to get some sort of stuff in balance. Like I told people this year, you know, 2018 was a great year for me personally.
Yeah.
But a real, not a great year for me professionally.
Uh-huh.
And there was some good professional stuff that happened, but I view it as an overall, like, nah, I'm not as good as the ones in the past, like comparatively, I guess.
I kind of think that I'm at this point in my life too, is that, I feel, and I do this a lot in my self-talk too, as far as like to fight my own thing about anxiety, is that, you know, just the non-attachment to all of it, because it doesn't really matter. Because none of this really matters, you know? I mean, not to get real
nihilistic.
Dark, but it doesn't really matter, because no one will. I don't know if your listeners want to hear this from me, but
please.
But none of it really matters. Like, it doesn't matter how successful I am. There's no root that you can put into the ground so deep that people will remember you or love you for it. And I know that that sounds terrible, but it doesn't.
It's sobering. I think it's sobering.
Yeah.
I think it's helpful. Well, we attach our self-worth to a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, and it's not.
And the end result too. And you miss the journey. Like you were saying, like during your years at Gilmore Girls, I bet you, would you go back and just tell yourself, like, calm down, enjoy this?
Oh God, yes. oh my God. That's the nice thing that has happened recently because the way I treated that whole experience was so unhealthy that I was like, if I could only get on another show, I at least want to do the process better.
Yeah.
And so this past year I was able to get on another show and it was so healing. Well, two things were healing. One, we got to do a reboot of Gilmore Girls, and to be able to actually do that show and have such a great feeling towards it, that was great.
Yeah.
And then to do a to get on a series regular on another show, and just the whole process of how I approached it and the connections and the feeling and the appreciation I had for every little step along the way of it. That just mentally for me has healed the memories of
but being so hard unfortunately on myself. You had to go through that Gilmore Girl experience to get there, but that's kind of how this shit works, unfortunately.
Yeah
That's the shitty part of failure, is like it does teach you this thing, but you kind of do go through the shit of it.
Yeah.
And it really is this big learning experience. What do you want people to kind of get? What was your goal with the book? Like, what do you want people to get out of it?
I think that, like, I wrote it for people that are specifically like myself, where you have maybe a lot of anxiety and are too hard on yourself. So all of the exercises in it are really to kind of unravel that side and trust yourself and right. enjoy mm-hmm. the process and to be easier on yourself when there are those moments. I actually have one page in there that's about like describe the perfect funeral for a project that you love that has ended.
Yeah.
Like just for a moment to say like, oh, I'm sad about this thing, yeah. you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
And did your, I mean, I'm guessing improv helped with that, with yeah. just learning how to, I mean, I teach it now, and that's kind of the big thing I try to push people. I kind of say the same shit to them. I was like, guys, the one big note I give to everybody is you're never going to do this scene again. Might as well have as much fun with it as possible. But truthfully, unless yeah, you're doing yeah, a second yeah, yeah. beat of it, but even in a second yeah. beat, you might be taking the same right. fun thing from it yeah. or game or whatever, but you're never going to do that scene ever again. Yeah. So if it's shit, we'll never see it again. You can learn from it. If it's great, remember that feeling. It'll bring yeah. you back. It'll bring you back for 6 months because you're always going to try to get to that feeling again. Yeah. When you have a good scene, it buys you. Oh. I always tell people like half
oh,
a
God.
Year.
Oh, God. No, it's so true. That's
gives
thing.
You about
it's
a half a year, God. Sometimes a year. Depends yeah, yeah. on how great the oh, scene was. Because you feel like you're floating through it and you feel truly connected to someone else.
I love
and it's
it.
A weird spiritual kind of thing yes. if you want to get real nerdy about it, right?
Yes.
But most of the time we're trying to get there. And because we're trying to get there, we're not allowing ourselves to fully be there.
Yeah.
And it's a paradox. I mean, it's a yeah. it's a fucked up thing. So I just try to reiterate, you're never going to do this scene again. Might as well have as much fun, especially if it's a shit show.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can feel it going down, let's make some choices to have some fun in this moment.
Yeah.
Because then we're going to edit and you're never going to be there again.
Yeah.
It's either a blessing or a curse. I mean, whatever, however you view it, you're like, oh God, thank God that was over. It's yeah. like, okay.
Uh-huh.
Learn from it. Move on. Uh-huh. Do another. You got another scene to do. That's like the best part about it. But it's similar.
Yeah, and isn't that the greatest thing? I'm such an improv lover. But I mean, when you either do a scene that's magic, mm-hmm. or you see a mm-hmm. scene that is magic, mm-hmm. I gotta think there's actually nothing better.
No.
I mean, there are whatever movies, blah blah blah, famous directors, whatever. But if you yeah. you're there in the audience and yeah. something is clicking
yeah.
and going right, or yeah. it's just
you don't need any drugs. You don't need anything. Kind of, you yeah. are transcending a lot. It's
so
a transcending experience.
Incredible. Because yeah. when you're laughing and crying and yeah. like clutching at your chest because it's so true
yeah.
and painful and hilarious and smart.
I think the people that kind of
oh, God.
You go like, okay, yeah, look down upon that stuff or go like, yeah. come on, it's improv. I go like, you're not
no.
allowing yourself.
Yeah.
You're blocking yourself off from actually going on the roller coaster.
Yeah.
Like you're not getting on the ride.
Oh, it's
you're
so
sitting
good.
There judging yeah. people on a roller coaster and being like, that doesn't look that fun, or like, you guys are crazy. It's just like, try it.
No, it's great.
Be there.
It's great.
Sit
it's
close.
Addictive.
Sit
it's
close.
A, yeah, yeah,
yeah. Be really close.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why live improv works,
uh-huh.
especially in a small space, because the energy
yeah.
you just it just feels like you're really, and that's why also when I teach, I'm like, just be clear with each other too, because you don't realize the audience is with you.
Yeah.
And if you're not clear, they're not clear, they're not going to laugh, they don't feel in on the joke, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the clarity is so important there. So when you're really on, when you're really clear with each other, mm-hmm. and everything just makes sense, then everybody's on the same page. It's amazing. It's a magical it's a magical
yeah.
experience.
Do you ever because what one of the things I was just thinking mm-hmm. I should have realized this a decade ago, but about improv of really all we want is a person to be clear
mm-hmm.
and to honestly try to do mm-hmm. one thing
mm-hmm.
and we're with you.
Yep.
And I feel like that's so true about a lot of yeah. different art.
Yes.
And that, but we're not with you if you're trying to think three moves ahead and you're trying to be snarky
mm-hmm.
and you're trying to wink, wink about, mm-hmm. I'm actually better than this.
Yeah.
We can never go on that ride with you because you're not on the ride.
Yeah, there's some sort of, I think there's a fear of going all the way.
Yeah.
There's this fear of like full vulnerability, because if I'm fully there, then I can be fully judged,
yeah.
right? So it's a protection thing that I think the best improvisers that we love and watch are fully
yes.
present and fully vulnerable. They're also technically like
right.
their recall, you know, in their brains, like, and how they can speak. That's also a gift, but
mm-hmm.
a lot of their gift is full commitment to the vulnerable parts of their scene
yeah.
or their character.
Yeah.
You know, high status character, low status character, whatever it is, like they're fully invested in it, fully
yeah.
committed to it. They love it like you do. Like when you're reading your when you're reading a script, I feel like these people love being these characters, even if the character is really downtrodden or something like that. And yeah, it's a combination of like full vulnerability, and then they also have this technical ability where it's Shakespearean of how they can use the English language off the cuff is just, I'm from North Jersey. It's just not going to happen. I try my best. I go more like, I got the commitment thing down, the free flowing. Nah, it's just, it always comes out wrong. Words always come out wrong out of my mouth. I was like, I've learned
that's a gift too.
I've talked about this plenty, but going through the UCB courses, I always felt, and I felt like I was a smart person, but like going through the UCB courses, I always felt dumb because everyone around me seemed so astute and smart and all this stuff. And I felt really insecure about that. So I think I leaned into my like commitment stuff, but at the same time, when those wrong words would come out, I remember being on a team and I said, like the wrong actor. I think I said Leslie Nielsen and I meant Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
I said Leslie Nielsen. And they just supported that so much. And it was kind of a turning point for me to be like, oh, maybe I can just be me here.
Yeah.
And there'll be people around me that will support that. Yeah. You know, that's the joy of being out there with people. I think the scary thing is when you're doing stuff by yourself. And
yeah.
Did you go through trouble with was there any doubts like when you were writing this or going through it, was there any times where you're like, I don't think this is going to work out? Or were you pretty focused? And was there any speed bumps along the way?
I think there were little speed bumps, maybe towards the end, just technical things because I've never done it before.
Yeah.
But the big chunks of it, I sort of, I trusted in the brains of the people that are smarter than me, my editor and my manager. And I said, look, to myself, I said this. I'm going to be as honest and direct and truthful as I can be, and I'm just going to put it on the page.
Mm-hmm.
And then you tell me if this is anywhere near to what we're supposed to be doing, question mark.
Yeah.
And they were great, and it didn't – I don't know. They kind of shepherded me through, and there wasn't so much – of a fight, and there for me there wasn't an internal fight. I just decided I'm gonna put the book on the shelf that I would take with me, or that would survive a purge, a personal. You know, when you're throwing everyone, you're getting rid of everything.
Yeah, like
everything.
I can't throw that out.
Yeah. Like, gotcha. That was my only goal.
Right.
Put a piece of art, and I think this is true in all art in general. Is just try your best to create a piece of art that you would hang on your wall or you would put in your DVD player. Mm-hmm. DVD player, you know, that you would stream. God, I'm old.
You would put in your streamer.
Yeah, you would put in your streamer. You know what I'm saying, kids. So that's the level.
Yeah.
It's just trying to hit that as much as you can. And then that's all you can do.
Awesome. This is great.
Oh, thank you.
This is amazing.
Me.
Thank you so much for doing this. This was a fantastic conversation. I really appreciate you doing it.
Thanks for having me out.
Of course. That was Keiko again. Thank you so much, Keiko, for doing this. Guys, check out Dirty John. It just finished up on Bravo, but you can check it out on BravoTV.com. Check out this past season of Better Call Saul. Hopefully, it'll be on Netflix soon. If not, I say buy the thing. It's one of the best shows on television, hands down. Keiko's also in The First. That is on Amazon, so check that out. And grab Keiko's book, No Mistakes, wherever you get your books nowadays. You can follow Keiko on Twitter, at Keiko Agena. If you want a flurry of pop culture jokes by the minute, you can follow me at Don Finelli or at The Need to Fail. Questions, concerns, failure stories of your own, email me, theneedtofail@gmail.com. Call 657-222-1324. Leave me a message with your failures or fatherly advice, and I'll play them on this podcast. Bonus episodes are at patreon.com/theneedtofail. That's it for me here. We got all new failures coming at you next week. Thank you so much for listening. My name's Don Finelli. Mahalo your dreams.
Forever. This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.